A very good Saturday morning. You're very welcome along to the weekend edition here on Highland Radio with me, Greg Hughes. Coming up on the programme, we discussed locked-in syndrome. It's a disorder that can lead to complete paralysis of all voluntary muscles except the eyes. A Letterkenny doctor works in the field and explains the condition and interventions. The Argyll Arts Festival needs volunteers. We'll let you know how you can get involved if you wish. We chat about some of the most bizarre sporting activities ever devised, including fox tossing. There's live music in studio from Owen O'Callaghan, the voice behind Best Boy Grip, and much more besides. Text the show right now with your calls, comments and requests. 086-7700-555. You can call Yvonne directly on 07491-25000. Or if you're on Twitter, tweet me. It's at GregHughes2. Okay, we really do have a packed 2 hours between now and 12 o'clock. Hopefully, I can enjoy your company between now and then. If you haven't looked outside, I'm afraid it's another unpleasant day. Wind and rain lashing the northwest, as is the norm. But Met Aaron tell us, for what it's worth, that from the middle of next week onwards, we're going to see more June-like temperatures. So that's something to look forward to. Right, we'll kick off with a look at what's going to be in your Saturday papers when you get your hands on them, if you haven't already. The front of the Irish Daily Star, well, what's it got to do with you? FAI blast Enda over 5 million payout questions. That story is running on and on. And Kenny, of course, many people quite critical that it took maybe, what's it, 6-7 days for Enda Kenny to make a comment on the IBRC situation and Dáil Privilege and what have you. But only a matter of hours to speak on the FAI payment that was sanctioned by Sepp Blatter. But that's just an observation. That's the Irish Daily Star. Irish Daily Mirror. Irina, I didn't score with Sepp. Mystery of Ronaldo's goal and 79-year-old Blatter. That's a completely different take on the FAI scandal there, if you're interested. Do I have the Sun? I do indeed. Roy Keane's quoted on the back of the Irish Sun. Dear John, you're always a distraction. Roy Keane reckons John Delaney's always a distraction. Ireland's preparations for the first visit of England to Dublin in 20 years have been dogged by the revelation the FAI received $5 million in compensation from FIFA. And that's also on the front of the Irish Sun. I'm sorry, I didn't say $10 million. John Delaney told FAI officials his biggest regret over the FIFA hush money deal was not asking Sepp Blatter for €10 million. Euro. On to the Irish Daily Mail. Abortion doctor in UK. Well, there's doctors involved. They're charged with killing Dublin woman. A doctor and two nurses have been charged with the manslaughter of a woman from Ireland who had an abortion in London. The 32-year-old woman had an abortion at a clinic in Ealing, West London on January 2012 after she travelled there from Dublin. And there are doctors now being charged with her manslaughter there. Sad news from the world of showbiz and food and that type of thing. Paolo Tulio has died while awaiting a kidney transplant. Of course, he wrote very favourably about County Donegal in recent years when he visited the county with friends. OK, the Irish Independent, farewell Paolo. Tributes to our food critic who dies after illness. That's and Paolo was pictured on the front of the Indo. Elsewhere, Blatter joke sparked $5 million payout by FIFA. That's all well documented at this stage, isn't it? Irish Times, their weekend edition. FAI chief executive says $5 million payment not directly related to Henry Handball. And 2 days set aside for Dáil debate on IBRC inquiries. Another front, another story on the front of the Irish Times. OK, Jimmy Stafford, good morning.
Good morning, Greg. How are you doing?
Very well. How are you?
Not too bad. Now on the way up to Carndon, I know, in wet and windy rain.
Too much information, but thanks for letting us know. I'm only joking. The big Blue Box Volunteer Challenge. Tell us about that, Jimmy.
Yeah, Greg, it started yesterday in Moville, and I suppose in simple terms, what's happening, there's a Blue Box travelling right along the Wild Atlantic Way. Started in Kinsale yesterday and in Bank of Ireland Moville yesterday as well. And simultaneously, the two boxes will meet in Clifton in 3 weeks' time on Friday, the 16th, I think. And it's all in aid of St. Vincent de Paul, Greg. So it's moving from Bank of Ireland branch to Bank of Ireland branch, and all the cycling clubs along the way are taking part. So yesterday we had a load of cyclists from the Saddle Rock Cycling Club, left Moville and arrived in Carndon, and we had Gary Gamble and the Highland Radio Outside broadcast yesterday afternoon. And great crowds as well, and lots of money raised yesterday. And I suppose the beauty about it, Greg, is every euro that's raised is matched by the bank as well. So that's a big incentive. And for St. Vincent de Paul locally, the money stays in every town that the bikes go through or the cycle goes through. So we all know it's a fantastic cause out there. But this morning, Greg, it's moving from Carndon at 12:30, and again Saddle Rock and North Pole Cycling Clubs will be taking part, and hitting Muncrana at 12:30 today with a parade up the main street in Muncrana. So again, lots of people will be collecting around Muncrana from 12:30 onwards today.
So if you donate a quid, you can get a quid back off the Bank of Ireland, so that's €2, and that money will stay, as an example, that money will stay in Donegal, so you're helping out your fellow county people. You know you're doing that when you put your hand in your pocket.
Exactly. So all the money raised in Carndon yesterday, Greg, is staying in Carndon and will be matched. And the generosity yesterday was unreal. I mean, we had Highland Radio up there, but people were just... And as the St. Vincent de Paul people said yesterday, even if somebody puts in 20 cents, 5 20s make up €1.
Yeah.
And that's matched, as you said, by another euro. And again, on Monday, Greg, just, I suppose, it'll leave Muncrana and head to Letterkenny on Monday, and at about 2 o'clock on Monday the parade will be up the main street in Letterkenny, and there'll be a big carnival atmosphere down outside the Bank of Ireland on Monday in Letterkenny as well. So again, a great opportunity for people locally to support St. Vincent de Paul in Letterkenny on Monday.
And how long will the cyclists be in this county, because it's a 14 day event, isn't it? So
it is. So what's happening there, Greg, from Tuesday onwards we'll be going up to Falcarra, Bunbeg, into Dunloe, over to Glenties, Killybegs, Donegal. So over the next week, it's around Donegal up to next Friday and into Ballyshannon next Saturday. So the full week I'll be travelling around. And Greg, the cyclists, the cycling clubs have been superb, you know, when you put the shout out and they're turning up to support us. And even the cycling clubs are asking us how much do they have to pay to cycle the route.
Okay.
So we're absolutely delighted the cyclists are just coming along. And
it's on the Wild Atlantic Way, that's the cycle route, is it? Or thereabouts, using it as a guide at least.
Exactly, yeah. So it left Kinsale and Cork at the same time yesterday, and it's moving up. So it's moving around, and it's great. It's on Twitter as well, so it's a great tourism thing as well for I suppose we're promoting Donegal on Twitter and all that sort of stuff, which is great, Greg.
For sure. Now, if people can't encounter the blue box or the cyclists, is there a way that they can donate if they so wish?
Yeah, it's on the bigbluebox.com. There's a website. And again, if they just want to call into a local Bank of Ireland branch as well, there's buckets there. They can throw in a euro or 10 cent or 20 cent. And there's various draws. So there's various means of contributing along the way as well.
Okay, sounds fantastic. And well done to Bank of Ireland. Jimmy, of course, people know you from Highland, but you're also involved with BOI as well, aren't you?
Correct, yeah, up in Carndon there, something in the show.
Very good. Well.
But it's just, look, it's nice to give something back to the community, Greg, as well. And people are really, yesterday was a great example. People came out in their droves. And I think when, you know, it's such a very, very good cause at a local level. And as you said, Greg, at the start, the money is stayed locally, which, you know, when people hear that they appreciate that as well.
And fair play to the lads and lasses involved on the bikes. It's not the best weather for it.
No, I just got a call there. There's a safety officer involved and he's a bit nervous about this morning. But them lads, if you saw them yesterday, they're well enabled for weather like this, snow, rain or hail. So we'll be leaving Cairn at 11:30. So if you see him along the way, give him an old beep.
Yeah, okay. Cheers, Jimmy. Thanks very
Thank
much
you,
for
Greg.
That. Safe
Thanks
journey.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Jimmy Stafford there. Of course, lots of cyclists on the road, so as drivers we have to be careful as well as the cyclists. Judy Nelson, a very good morning to you, Judy.
Good morning to you, Greg. How are you?
Oh, I'm better now. You sound so awake and bright. You've had your Weetabix.
No Weetabix, Greg, because I'm doing the H2O challenge for the RLI, so
right.
No milk, I'm afraid. No milk.
Lovely segue there. Well, when I was younger, we had them with water, but anyway, that's a different story. That's obviously when the milk rang out. So tell us about the H2O-only challenge, Judy.
Right. The H2O-only challenge, Greg, is a challenge where you only drink water for 10 days in aid of the RNLI. Now, when I say only drink, of our allowed food. We're allowed to eat normally, but we only drink H2O for 10 days and to raise funds for the lifeboats. So there's no morning coffee, there's no orange juice, no fizzy drinks, no tea, just H2O for 10 days.
And this is all to raise money, isn't it?
It is. It's to raise funds for the RNLI and also to raise a bit of awareness about the RNLI, because obviously we're entering the summer months here on the North Coast and around the coast of Ireland. And it's just to raise awareness and have a wee bit of a challenge and a wee bit of fun at the same time.
You know, the RNLI does amazing work, and I follow the RNLI Out for a Shout Twitter account. And, you know, while we're all sitting watching TV or doing whatever we're doing, these tweets keep popping up of these volunteers heading out in some awful weather, sacrificing and risking, should I say, their own lives to help other people. It's an amazing organisation. It's only when you see how often they're called out across these islands that you realise that the amazing and difficult work that they do.
Absolutely, absolutely. Greg, and as you said, all our crew are volunteers. They give up their own time in terms of training, shouts, exercises and whatever, and they're an amazing bunch. And of course, you have your own bunch over there in Lough Swilly. They've just taken delivery of their new Shannon-class lifeboat.
That's right, that's the first in the country, isn't it, Judy?
It is indeed, yeah. And they called in with us on their way home from Poole. They made us their last stop here.
Very good.
Portrush, and we had a great day with them. But as I say, all volunteers, a great bunch of guys and girls.
Indeed. Now, how far into this H2O only challenge are you, Judy, or have you started yet?
Oh, yes. We started on Tuesday, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first Saturday morning. Pass out a cup of coffee. I have to say, I feel very refreshed.
I was going to ask you, has it affected your health at all? Because, you know, all this tea and coffee that we drink, you know, milk's okay, but all this tea and coffee that we drink and maybe excess sugars in some of this processed orange juice, have you felt any difference in your energy levels or health or anything like that, Judy?
At the start, I have to say, I had headaches. I had withdrawal headaches from the caffeine, because I love my coffee. I'm a coffee addict, and anybody who knows me will tell you that. So I had headaches at the early start of the week, but now I have to say I feel very energized.
Right.
I feel very good, feel very refreshed. Still thinking about that cup of coffee next Saturday morning, mind you.
I'm sure you are.
And a glass of wine on Friday night. However, at this point in time, I'm feeling good.
Very good. Now, if people want to support this fantastic cause, they can do, can they?
Oh, yes, they can. If they go onto Facebook, they RNLI have a Facebook page, and also they have a web page as well, rnli.org.uk, and you will find ways to donate. There's just giving pages as well. I have a just giving page, and I know a number of others have too, but Facebook will give you a lot of information, as will the website, the RNLI website, Greg.
You'll have that Friday night glass of wine and the Saturday morning coffee well earned by the time next Saturday rolls around, Judy.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to it.
Is it cruel for me to say that I'm literally now about to have a cup of coffee?
You're a heartless man.
I'm not. I'm not going to drink it in support of you and the fantastic work the RNLI do, Judy.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us on the programme, and the best of luck.
It's a pleasure, Greg.
All right,
thank
God
you very
bless
much
you.
Indeed.
Take care.
All the best.
Bye.
Bye.
And a very good morning, Brian Gregg.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Now, Brian, people may have already saw your video, but we'll get to that. Perhaps you can tell us how this all came about. It started last Christmas, did it?
Actually, a little bit after that. So before that, probably. I actually got a study abroad scholarship to go study in America, and I went over there and had a great time. But I also travelled a lot whilst I was there, and I always had a tiny little camera with me, a GoPro camera, just carried it around, and kind of filmed discreetly, and ended up making a massive video of it.
And what was this part of a project? Was it just something you decided to do yourself?
Oh, I just decided. I've always loved making videos, probably been making them for about 4 years now. And I just decided that I was going to make a massive video so that I'd have something to look back on whenever I'm like 70 years old and really boring. I'd be able to look back and see what I'd done with my life.
500 gigabytes. You will be busy in your later years if you watch it all. And that's just this project.
Yeah, that's true. I filmed quite a lot, and obviously a lot didn't actually make it into the video. So that's kind of nice to have the overview of the year with that one video.
Well, you trimmed it down to eight minutes, didn't you?
Yes, I did, which was quite a job, to be honest.
I can imagine. I mean, 500 gigabytes, how many hours would that equate to?
I honestly have no idea.
Well, say a gig an hour or something like that. Anyway, it's a lot, if not a little less anyway. So tell us about some of your experiences in travelling over these six countries. And it was all, the majority of it, the interest bits, I'm sure, were captured with this GoPro camera.
Yes, they were. So I always just tended to go on the internet and see where the cheapest flight was from me, like the next week, and just kind of book that. So, say for example, there was one time that I just flew to Miami for really cheap because I was out in America, and I didn't really have a clue what was going to happen there. I just booked the cheapest hostel, the cheapest flight, and just went and saw what adventures I could find.
And you found loads, didn't you? Well, tell us some of the stuff you did.
Just absolutely tons of just visiting different places, meeting different people. So I went to, I went to Miami, California, Spain and Germany. And I just tended to meet tons of people and just go to different events. And it's just wonderful.
Sounds absolutely brilliant. And that's where I'd say the real challenge to the editing comes down. Because it wouldn't be about finding 8 minutes of interesting stuff, because you're going to have that. But it's deciding what goes in and what goes out when things are, you know, special memories to you too, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah. It was all just about really finding what I thought I'd want to look at whenever I'm older and just how it would look good to me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, it's about, it has to have you in it, doesn't it, for you to have the passion to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and so the video has really taken off, as you'd imagine.
Well, I didn't really imagine it to happen.
Right.
I made the video, as I said, for myself, and then I shared it on my Facebook, and it just kind of took off. All my friends got it, started sharing it, and then I think a couple of media sources found it and started sharing it, and I think it's racked up about 20,000 views now.
And that's going to increase, I'm sure.
Don't know.
you're pretty modest on it, but you can be sure of that too. One reviewer said that it'll make you want to get off your couch this Saturday afternoon and do something. So it's a fantastic life experience. And where can we get our eyes on this video, Brian?
Just on my YouTube channel. If you just search my name, Brian Gregg, it should come up. Or if it's called The Life of Brian, kind of a pun on the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But my name's spelled with a Y rather than an I, so if you just search for that, you'll find it.
And you talk about how you do like to make videos and what have you. What, have you any projects lined up or...?
No, not really, to be honest. I'd like to work on some video projects. I just need to figure out how to get into that field, really.
Yeah, well, I think you've put a decent CV out there to that end anyway, haven't you? if you're looking to meet a tight deadline to get something edited down, to get 500 gig down to 8 minutes, I think that's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
All right, then, listen, it's been great speaking to you, Brian. I look forward to seeing the video myself. I haven't seen it yet, and we'll be linking it on our Facebook page as well, and we wish you the very, very best of luck.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, take care. That is Brian Gregg there, who... went travelling, captured it all on video, and the video is available to see on YouTube. We'll link it on our Facebook page. It's / Highland Radio Hub is the page where you can get all the information there if you wish. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. We're joined on the telephone line now by Dr. Damien Cole. Damien, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Damien, you're originally from Letterkenny, are you?
That's right, yeah.
Oh, very good. Nice to have the local connection. Now, we're talking about locked-in syndrome, and I think for many people this would be one of the worst nightmares, but for some it's an absolute reality. Can you explain the condition to us, Doctor?
Well, locked-in syndrome is where you're fully aware of your surroundings, but you're unable to communicate or have any overt motor control. So in some cases, locked-in syndrome consists of you're not even able to do a reliable eye blink. But then there's another spectrum of consciousness called disorders of consciousness, where sometimes clinical teams don't even know if you're consciously aware. So sometimes after a traumatic brain injury, following coma, you might be diagnosed as being in a vegetative state, where that's a condition of complete unawareness, complete unconsciousness, but you're actually awake. Whereas a minimally conscious state is where you have fluctuating levels of awareness, or teams are unable to assess your awareness because you're unable to respond using any kind of motor responses.
A very complicated situation for medical professionals, that. Is there a reliable way at this stage from differentiating between those two scenarios you outlined?
Well, there are a number of standard tests, but a lot of those tests require overt motor control, as I said. We've been developing a technology that's based on a technology called brain-computer interface, where we record a person's brain activity using electrodes attached to the head, and basically we record an EEG or electroencephalogram, commonly known as brain waves. So we can ask the person to imagine, say, for example, squeezing their hand or wiggling their toes. And we ask them to do that repetitively over a number of trials. And then we look at the brain response and visualize the brain response. And if we see a difference in the brain response associated with those two imagined movements, then we know the person has heard us and they've got a level of cognitive awareness that they can understand language and so on. So
how do you, in that situation, which I imagine internally you'd be panicking greatly, you'd be, you know, who knows what state of anxiety you would be in, would that possibly, is it difficult then to determine the responses, as you mentioned there, like the likes of squeezing, from other brain activities such as anxiety or stress or the absolute horror perhaps the person might feel of being in that situation?
Well, it is difficult even from able-bodied or healthy individuals to discriminate different mental tasks or imagined movements from all other background activity, and there's other noise sources as well. But the motor cortex is reasonably well defined. The motor cortex controls your movements. So when you imagine right arm movement, for example, you've got left hand side changes over sensory motor areas. And if you imagine left arm movement, you've got right hand side changes over sensory motor areas. So you've kind of got a good idea where the signals will change. And then those two different lateralized activities can be detected and discriminated between.
As it relates to the condition itself, if someone, and it is rare, thankfully, but if someone suffers from the neurological disorder, locked-in syndrome, is it something that, you know, happens over a period of time, or does it happen and then the person has the ability to move? You know, do you understand where I'm going with that?
Well, in some cases, say, for example, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis or motor neuron disease, a person's muscular control gradually degrades over time. But in the case of, say, for example, a traumatic brain injury, you know, it's a sudden trauma to the brain. Sometimes people don't recover from that and they never regain any kind of control. And, you know, some of the patients we work with, you know, maybe could be in that condition for 12, 15 years and, you know, they're not even able to lift their head. Sometimes they don't know if people don't, or the family don't know if they're consciously aware or not. So the technology we've developed has the capacity to indicate a level of awareness. But not only that, we've been developing the technology to allow people to communicate.
So yeah, that's what's going to be my next question. Before we get to that, this has been 15 years of work at least for you so far, hasn't it?
Yes. So my background is in computing and electronics, and so I'm not a medical doctor. And, you know, initially I did a PhD and I was doing the signal processing to try and reliably extract information from brainwaves. And then in 2011, we got ethical approval to work at the National Rehabilitation Hospital in Dunleary and trial the technology as a communication device. And during that time, we worked with spinal cord injured and stroke survivors. But then we came across this group of disorders of consciousness following brain injury. And those groups really have no other option. Our technology offers a movement-free communication, so you don't have to be able to move to actually control the technology. However, it is very challenging to learn how to control the technology. It's challenging for the person, and it's challenging for the researchers to try and, you know, develop the system to reliably do that.
Now, moving on to as you mentioned, the possible use of this for communication. I mean, for someone or a family, anyone to experience this, it'd be an incredibly difficult situation. And you would take any communication with the person that you're caring, care and love for as much as you can. How do you see that developing, the communications aspect of it?
Well, for some of these families and patients or participants, you know, even a basic yes, no to answers would be mean an awful lot to them. Basically, if we can discriminate between brain signals associated with imagined right arm movements, say, for example, imagining lifting a weight with the right arm versus imagining lifting weight with the left arm, then we've got basically a binary or a binary communication, a yes or a no. And, you know, that's the first point where you start with. But if you can go beyond that as well, but it does take time to train that. You know, as a child, you learn to grasp an object, and the first time you didn't do it, you got the visual feedback and the haptic feedback from your hand, and over time you learned that grasp. Brain-computer interface is a similar sort of learning process where you imagine movement, you see a cursor or a character on the screen moving to the right when you imagine right arm movement, and you see it moving to the left when you imagine left arm movement. And at the start it doesn't do it very reliably, but as you learn from how the character moves or the cursor moves, then you gradually get better and better. So you're developing your motor cortex to perform another function, not controlling your hands or muscles, but to control an object on a screen.
So to some extent you're rewiring your brain.
Exactly, yeah. You're creating a new task for your motor cortex. But the task is to produce different brain activity that we record at the scalp using electrodes.
How has this been received from medical doctors or the medical profession as a whole? What has your feedback been? Because, well, I'm not saying that you're saying this, but perhaps some would say that, you know, they can be slow to adapt to certain things, particularly maybe technology or innovation.
Well, from my experience, you know, we've worked with consultants in rehabilitation medicine at the National Rehabilitation Hospital in Dunleary, the Regional Acquired Brain Injury Unit in Musgrave Park Hospital in Belfast, and Spruce House Hospital in Altnagelvin in Derry. And, you know, they're all very encouraged by the results that we're getting. You know, we're trying to build up a larger evidence base, but, you know, they can see the value in it already. You know, one of the family we work with down in Cork, you know, they've been overjoyed to find something that might actually be useful, and, you know, they've already seen it having an impact in terms of, before we did our assessments, they weren't quite sure, you know, they didn't have any clear evidence that their son was aware. Whereas after we did it, then, you know, the evidence was there. And
which means so much.
Means a lot. Like I can remember the day we did it. We use a game to train people. So you basically control a character in a game by imagining the movement. And I remember the first time we'd done a session with a person in this condition, it was great to see that they could have some influence on something in the outside world after being in a condition like this for 15 years.
Now, how close do you think you are to this being made commercially available or available more widespread?
Well, we've been making an effort to develop a commercial device for quite a number of years now, but recently we've just come through an Invest Northern Ireland proof of concept fund, so we've developed our own hardware that you can place electrodes on the head at a lower cost than some of the devices that are out there on the market, and we've translated a lot of our research software into a sellable application, and, you know, we're at the commercialization stage now where we're trying to develop the complete product package and get it out to as many people as possible. You know, recently we entered the Invent competition in Northern Ireland, which is a business plan competition for early stage startups and business ideas. And luckily enough, we're in the finals now. I think that's where you picked up some of the publicity on that as well.
And another thing which is great about this is it's non-invasive, which would be a worry maybe for some families.
Yeah, like EEG is completely non-invasive. Mm. There are other brain-computer interface technologies that are invasive, and, you know, some of the work that's going on in the States, in particular, where you actually embed electrodes in at the surface of the cortex, or even in the cortex. However, they're still quite a bit away yet because of the invasiveness of them and so on. So EEG is completely non-invasive, but that poses other challenges because, you know, movement of electrodes and you know, whenever the brain signals get through the skull and so on, they're distorted quite a bit before, you know, so just getting a reliable signal there is sometimes quite challenging.
It's incredibly interesting and incredibly important work for those affected by it. Dr. Damien Cole, thank you so much for explaining it to us so well.
No, lots of coverage in the newspapers today of the passing of Paolo Tullio, a food critic and a friend of Donegal too, and a friend of Sinead McGowan. Good morning to you, Sinead.
Good morning. How are you, Greg?
I'm okay. Condolences on the loss of a man you knew. Paolo had worked his way into the hearts of many in Ireland, hadn't he?
Oh, he had. And I would say now I've known him for the last 10 years. I don't even remember how we met or how we got in touch. But every time I used to ask him to come to Donegal, and he loved coming down. He loved the scenery. He said it reminded him of his home in Wicklow. But most of all, he said that, in his opinion, we were the friendliest people in the world. That he just loved the friendliness of the people of Donegal.
Indeed. And highly respected in his field too.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. He wrote 3 cookbooks. It was only, and one of those cookbooks, his last one, which is an Italian cookbook, he left a lovely personal message. He was in Lahey with it a couple of years ago, and he left a lovely personal message on it to do with the people of Donegal and all. I'll treasure that forever. But he was he loved his food. He loved his wine, but he knew what he was talking about. He was an expert in it. Absolutely. I've never met anyone in my life who knew so much about food as he did.
And a real people's person, had great time for people too, we were told.
Oh yeah, we would go out, say for dinner, he would maybe, there's different restaurants that he would have done on different occasions when he was here in Donegal. And on one occasion, I know we were in the Italian in Donegal, in La Belladonna, and he could hear music coming from the bar next door, and all he wanted to do was get in there to see who was in there and to mix. And he couldn't get over, like, he would have spoke to, say, the seniors, and he would have spoke to the juniors and all age groups. He got on with everybody. He loved talking to them. He loved hearing their stories, where they were from, what they were doing. He was definitely a people's person, yeah.
That's the real inn you were talking of. I presume you heard the traditional music going on in there. Now, another thing too, I noticed the reading what he wrote about his visit to Donegal. It wasn't all the top restaurants and what have you. He would comment on cafes or, you know, anywhere really where there was a sort of a dining experience.
Oh, and that's the type of person he was. He would just pull up and he would see a wee cafe and he'd say, oh, you know what, I'm going to try in here. And he would talk and then write about the scone that he had and the cup of tea that he had, because that's the type of person he was. He treasured everything. No, it wasn't. And I would have said to him the last time he was down, do you want to come and stay with us out in Loch Esk? And he would say, no, Sinead, you know what? No, I'm going to stay in this B&B, or I'm going to stay there, because he wanted to experience different things about the county and about the places that he'd been. And that was the type of person he was, yeah.
Okay, well, he's a big loss, and we appreciate, Sinead, you've lost a friend. We appreciate you coming on and discussing it with us. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Sinead McGowan there, talking about her friend Paolo, who has passed away following illness.